from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 288, recorded live Thursday, September 29th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Steve Souders, head performance engineer at Google, about web performance and open source initiatives.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with Steve Souders, head performance engineer at the Google. Is that right?
Yeah. Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm pretty well. Have you always been at Google?
No, I've been here a long time now, 3.5 years. I still feel new, but you know, Google's pretty old. But before that, I was at Yahoo for 8 years, started a company before that I sold. And before that, I was at WhoWare that got bought by Lycos. And so I had the pleasure of being at two companies that have a grammatical symbol in their name. WhoWare had a question mark, Yahoo with the exclamation point. And was at some AI companies before that.
Cool. It's funny. I've been at Microsoft 3.5 years, and I feel like I'm new too. I still try to pretend like I'm new in presentations, and people aren't buying it at this point.
Yeah, I think. You know, I don't know what the exit turnover rate is at Google. My guess would be that it's lower than other companies, and I know folks at Microsoft like Eric Lawrence. You know, some of the people that I've been in touch with there are real old timers. And I think for, you know, these good big companies, there's a fair amount of retention of people who were there in the early days. And so when you go into meetings and there's someone who has an employee ID number that's two orders of magnitude lower than yours, you kind of still feel new.
Yeah. That's funny. Actually, one question I didn't think I was going to ask you, but now I want to ask you is that I've kind of complained internally and also a little bit publicly about Microsoft people will be upset when I say this, but I've complained about what I call college hires. You know, like, you know, I'm 38 and I'll meet some guy who's 38 and we'll start talking and he seems like a nice guy, but then he'll feel very Microsofty. Like I can feel the Microsoftiness and I'll say, well, where did you work before this? And I'll find out he was hired out of college and he's been there for 20 years or something. Is there a Google equivalent of like a lifer who's never worked a quote unquote real job?
I've never met someone like that. I'm sure they exist. I have met, you know, interns and other people that we've hired straight from college, but they're usually like 24 years old. So they've only, you know, been here a couple of years. So I'm sure some exist, but in general, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like it when people, actually, my favorite Microsoft people are the ones that leave, go and fail at a startup and then come back.
Why?
Because they have to then use our tools and they're always more customer focused. They go out, they try to buy our stuff or license our stuff. They suffer and they gnash their teeth and they come back and they say, we can make this better. You know, that's why I came here. I think that's cool. I respect people who went out, tried something, failed and said, all right, I know why this failed. I'm going to go back and I'm going to make something better. And we always have fun with those guys.
Yeah. There are people who have left Google and come back and yeah, they definitely have more perspective.
Yeah, definitely. So head performance engineer, that's a big thing. Performance, important. Engineer, that doesn't say manager, that's good. Head, that's very important. This is a very important job that you have here. Is this an evangelism thing or are you literally the head performance engineer and you're focused on performance of all the properties and setting the tone for performance as a value at the entire company?
It's much more evangelism. One of the things, when I started working on performance at Yahoo, we did really great work there. You know, I started that exceptional performance group and got YSLO out and we started doing studies and blogging and it was going really well. That was a very successful, episode. But towards the end, Google was getting bigger and stronger. And as I would bump into these people from Google, I got kind of excited about thinking about making the move because people at Google really dug scalability and performance and optimization, just everyone I talked to. And, you know, nothing against Yahoo, but, you know, you could tell it was just part of the culture. And in fact, I forget what it is. It's like this, you know, seven, you know, tenets of Google or something like that. There's a web page you can find out there that talks about, you know, the core beliefs. And I think item number four is fast is better. So it really has been around, you know, and part of the culture from the get-go. And so when I came over here, always part of my, well, part of my job at Yahoo and here has been doing internal consulting and working with teams internally. But I don't have to do that much of it here because literally everyone is conscious of and working on performance. Not just engineers, even, you know, PMs are thinking about that and messaging that. We just had this blog post yesterday about, it was about mobile optimization in terms of content, but that translates into faster performance. So we had this announcement yesterday, you know, someone working on AdWords for mobile announced that, sites that are optimized for mobile are going to get a better AdWords quality score and get more revenue. So like it's everywhere. And, that's very cool. So as a result, I don't need to do as much internal evangelism here. And so really a large majority of my job is, so there's two things about that I want to make sure to mention. You know, one is a vast majority of my job is outward facing. Mm-hmm. And the other is I can take very little credit for the performance stuff that comes out of Google. Cause really it's coming from all the folks that work here.
So it sounds like they bought what you're selling, right? I mean, performance is baked into the culture of Google, and now you're trying to bake it into the culture of the internet. Everyone should think about performance.
Yeah, and it's really nice. You know, it's really nice that there are companies like Yahoo and Google that are big enough to sponsor someone like me. I mean, really, I'm kind of like a research scientist, ombudsman for web performance across the industry, and for Google, that makes a lot of sense. You know, one, like, let's face it, there's a financial upside. If people spend more time on the internet and they're more engaged, then they'll see more ads and maybe click on more ads. And Google's one of, if not the biggest advertiser on the internet. So there's a financial upside for making the web more enjoyable and engaging. And mm-hmm. speed of that experience, of course, is going to make that more likely to happen. It's also got, you know, maybe some altruistic benefits. There are studies, I forget, who it was. I can find it, but there were just some studies that came out a few months ago analyzing internet infrastructure and adoption of web technologies across developing regions around the world. And they're showing that, you know, for countries that have, more internet adoption, jobs and exports double or something like that. So, you know, it raises the quality of life. And the other thing that's really important that I think all web companies should be interested in and have a stake in is the web stack. As much as we complain, Alex Russell just, you know, wrote a great blog post this week about the W3C and how it should be disbanded. And as much as, you know, I don't enjoy sitting through standards committee meetings, you know, the web is pretty cool for how it functions given the different parties and technologies that are used. And it's very open. And so I think any major, you know, web publisher, you know, AOL, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Yahoo should be very motivated to make sure that the open web stack is the web stack of choice going forward for developers and technology companies. And a big part of that happening is making sure that web stack is really, really fast and promotes a good user experience. And so, you know, it's really great that Google is willing to invest in having me figure out how to make that happen and share that with the rest of the world.
the full life cycle of performance is, you know, it can be everything from how things are working on the back end and how this web server is talking to that database or that other web service. But then there's also, I think, kind of an underappreciated side, which is the front end performance, the structuring the DOM and knowing how the DOM is parsed and JavaScript performance. There's what I call perception of speed performance. Do you focus on front end or back end, and why?
When I started the performance work around 2003, 2004, up until that point, I hadn't done any front end work at all. So before that, I had run my Yahoo team at Yahoo. I'd worked on the back end user database, you know, worldwide data replication architectures, you know, all this back end stuff. And I got asked to start working on performance. And I assumed, you know, in all of my work, just because of my, you know, background and personality, was heavily focused on optimizations. And so I assumed that when they meant performance, they meant back-end performance. And when we sat down with the chief product officer at the time at Yahoo to discuss what this group would do, he said, oh, no. What I'm talking about is the user experience performance. I want the user experience to be faster. It's not good enough right now. And that was the first time that I opened up a packet sniffer, and I loaded my Yahoo. I loaded some other popular websites. And I noticed this incredibly surprising and humbling and embarrassing thing that I call the performance golden rule, which is less than 10 or 20% of the overall time that the user waits for a website to load is due to what's happening on the back end. The other 80 to 90% is what's happening to transport the resources and to render the page in the client. And so up until that point, I think even still, when we think about performance and optimization, we think of the back-end database and the C++ compiler and the Apache configuration and our database schema and indexes. And what I tell people is you could drive all of that time to zero and most users wouldn't even notice. So what we really have to do is focus on this front-end part. If our focus is on a faster user experience, that back-end performance stuff is still really, really important, but it doesn't affect so much the user experience. It affects scalability. So, you know, if you have millions and millions and hundreds of millions of users, you really have to pay attention to the database indices and C++ compilers and all that other stuff. But it's important to know the impact of what you're working on. If you're working on back-end optimization, users aren't going to notice. You shouldn't look for any changes there 90% of the time. You know, if you want a faster user experience, don't spend time on the back end. Look in the packet sniffer and figure out what's taking the most time, and it's not going to be something on the back end. It's going to be JavaScript or something else that's blocking the page from loading.
Do the tools exist to figure that stuff out? I mean, every browser is different, and every browser's got their own JavaScript implementation, and every browser's got their own DOM implementation and HTML renderer, and you've already gone straight to packet sniffers when it comes to that. I mean, there are tools like yours, like YSlow, but this seems like it's a very important thing, but the tools really aren't there to do this. We're still kind of poking at this black box with sticks.
No, it's not. We're way past that. Oh my gosh. We're so far past that. So, the belief, the hypothesis of these two execs at Yahoo who started this group was, they were great visionaries, Ash Patel and Jeff Ralston, was they believed that there were best practices that would come out about making websites faster that would span most all the properties at Yahoo. So it wasn't like figure out how to make my Yahoo faster. It was like try to figure out how to make websites faster. And our hypothesis is that those best practices will span all the properties at Yahoo. And not only was that true, it turned out that those best practices apply to almost every website in the world. And so, you know, we found these best practices like, you know, get style sheets loaded as high up in the page as possible and, you know, reduce HTTP requests by creating sprites and inlining images with data URIs. And these apply to almost every website that's out there. And so once we know the best practices, the next step was, you know, I had these best practices in my mind, and I would sit down with development team after development team after development team, open up a packet sniffer, look at it, figure out what they could do to improve it, and relay it to them. And I just didn't have enough time to talk to every website that was out there. And so that's when I created YSLO to try to codify that knowledge that was in my head. And so now anyone out there, you know, YSLO and now the Google equivalent PageSpeed are available, and anyone can run that on their site and get basically a to-do list of what they can do to make performance better. And then now we're, for the last 2 years, we've been moving into the next phase, which is automation. And so there are these new web performance optimization service providers like Aptimize and Strange Loop Networks and Torbit that are providing services that will apply those fix-ups to your website automatically.
This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Careers 2.0. Careers 2.0 is a new service by our friends at Stack Overflow. You're probably all familiar with Stack Overflow, the online Q&A resource dedicated specifically to programmers and programming-related topics. Well, the team at Stack Overflow created Careers 2.0 to provide you with access to great jobs and introduce you to a bunch of great companies that you might consider working for, even if you're not currently looking for a job. Think of Careers 2.0 as a programmer profile. It gives you a platform to show that you're awesome by featuring your proudest contributions to Stack Overflow, GitHub, SourceForge, Bitbucket, anything programming related. You can even add your favorite programming books from Amazon.com. Profiles on Careers 2.0 are free. They're easy to get started, especially by importing your LinkedIn profile. However, there's one catch. Profiles on Career 2.0 are invite only. They did this to keep out the spam and have a high quality environment. Fortunately for you, as a Hansel Minutes listener, I've got your back. Head on over to careers.stackoverflow.com/HM to accept your invitation today. Once again, that's careers.stackoverflow.com/HM. I hope you like it.
So if the tools are there and PageSpeed and YSLO give the client developer that insight into their system and a checklist of what that they can do, and then there's server side things, like I think Google PageSpeed is out now, and you mentioned the other ones, and I know the guys at Strange Loop. What is the browser doing? Like, if it's so much better to have CSS at the top, why don't we just have the browser pretend that it's at the top? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the browser's job for optimization?
Yeah. Let's see. I think that's kind of a big question. I'll try to, you know, I could say a couple things about that. One is, you know, being at Microsoft and knowing, you know, IE's been around the longest. And, you know, so it's really hard for IE to change behavior that was cooked into IE way back when, because websites have been built to depend on those quirks. You know, that's the whole motivation behind quirksmode.org is tracking those kind of non-standard quirks that are in IE and have also been adopted by other browsers, because there are websites out there that only function if these quirks work the way they did 10 or 15 years ago. And so the browser developers are very, very careful to not change anything that could potentially break a website. They don't want to break a single website out there. Now, maybe if it was, you know, 10 websites across the entire world, that would be less of a concern. But, you know, if they can find a website that's going to break because of some change or optimization that they're making, all the browser vendors take that very seriously and try to avoid that, even at the expense of having quirks in the browser. And so that's one thing is, it's kind of hard to enforce these optimizations at a generic level across every website that exists in the world. So where we are right now, there are some things we can do. Like, we can make JavaScript faster. A great example is, and IE8 led the way, it was the first browser that downloaded scripts in parallel with other resources. So it turns out, like, there's no reason you can't do that. Download these bits and bytes across the network willy-nilly, get them down as soon as possible. Really, all the browser has to worry about is executing those bytes of JavaScript in the appropriate order. As long as you guarantee execution order, it really doesn't matter what order you get the bytes on the client. And so for whatever reason, the way the browsers used to work before IE8 was when you started downloading the script, it stopped everything else in the browser. And the browser wouldn't do anything. No other downloads, no other parsing, waiting for that script to download. And everyone realized there was no reason to do that. And so that was a safe change that could be implemented in every browser without breaking websites. And so the browsers got on top of that. But if you move all the style sheets to the top, it's possible that there's, one style sheet at the top that defines a class and it renders an element, and there's JavaScript that looks at the style properties of that element and does something based on that. And then later there's another style sheet that gets downloaded that changes that styling, but it's after the JavaScript is already executed, and so it doesn't matter. But if the browser just said, for every website, I'm going to move all the style sheets to the top, that one website out there would break. And so for some changes, if it's, deemed safe to apply everywhere, browsers can do it. But otherwise, what we see with people, website owners either running YSLOW and making optimizations themselves, they're choosing to do that. They're self-selecting to do that. Or a website will self-select to go through one of these optimization services. And so they have done the due diligence, and they own that decision of applying optimizations to their website. So that's kind of the difference, and I think where the main boundary is, the main line between what a browser can apply and what website owners have to self-select to buy into.
I hear what you're saying, and but pushing a little bit, just gently, to see if it actually makes sense to me, is that why not break a few websites? Right. Let's say, they change something and MSNBC breaks. So what? They'll fix it. It's on the server side. Why not let the voice of the many outweigh the needs of the one, right? I mean, a couple of tens of millions of people get a new browser. They get a new benefit. One of the millions of websites, or even if 10% of websites broke, that implies, what you're saying implies that they're static resources, that they've been forgotten, that they're burnt in amber and somehow cannot be updated by the humans that run them. Let them update their website. They're not unfixable entities.
I think coming from technology companies where a lot of what we deploy, we created, that makes sense. But there's a huge number of companies out there that rely on software that they didn't create and they don't own and they can't alter.
Hmm.
WordPress is a great example, but other CMSs come to mind. And so, like, if you broke some company that's using a CMS, and the reason is because the CMS is doing something antiquated, website is like, well, there's nothing I can do about that. I'm basically hosed.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of CMSs, the people who created that might not even be around anymore. They might not be able to make the change. And I think, like, if it was something where the benefit was very, very visible and very, very high, like a security fix, like if we don't deploy the security fix, there's a 10% chance you'll lose all your passwords. People would be like, okay, I'm okay with 10% of the websites I go to today not working because I don't want to lose my passwords. But if it's going to make everything 10 or 20% faster by making this change, but 1 out of 10 websites I go to don't work, then I'm not, that trade-off is going to be less obvious to users, and they might choose to switch browsers, or they might choose to turn off auto updates. And so, I think there's, in the browser teams, I think there's some reluctance to push out changes, even if they're going to have a positive impact on performance.
Mm. I recently updated I hired a designer and I had a guy redo my website. And in the process, I went through and ran YSLOW a number of times. And that caused me to go and do some bundling and minification of JavaScript and CSS. which was long needed. But I still think I have a C or a D. And I look at it and I say, well, I've got some ad networks and they're not cookieless domains. I don't want that counted against it. How much should I care about my D? You know, should I really, really make some hard decisions about what I do to try to get to a B? Or if I make some of the good changes it suggests and the site feels pretty good to me, then I'll just, you know, I'll sleep okay at night that I have a D in YSLOW.
Yeah, you know, if you have a B, like, I think you should work for an A, but you can sleep at night. If you have a D, yeah, you shouldn't be sleeping with a D. did you sleep last night?
I slept fitfully.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. Yeah, you just shouldn't sleep soundly.
Okay, good. But people look at that as the gospel. I mean, that's a credit, that's a report card, right? And you could come home with all A's, but your dad's going to be like, what's that B? What's the deal with that B?
Yeah.
How seriously do we take this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. There are all these case studies you can find in my almost every talk I do now starts with a bunch of case studies. You know, you're going to get, I mean, it depends on from site to site, but you're going to get some really positive lift in the metrics that you care about, whether that's conversions, cart size, page views per user, per session, whatever it is, you're going to get significant lift in those, you know, significant is, you know, 5 to 20% lift in those metrics if the website is faster. And so it does matter. And so going from a D is pretty bad. And, you know, what I always think about is, maybe the site doesn't seem that bad right now, but there are also people with laptops or mobile devices or internet connections that are much worse than what you're using. And for those people, it is very noticeable. And there's also, a new startup around the corner or a new blogger or whatever it is who's, coming up right behind you. And so, I think it's really important to provide that fast experience. And I'm glad, that folks like Fred Wilson and Mary Meeker, who have much more clout than I do, feel the same way. And I think it's important for a company on the web. You know, there are definitely more important things. You know, if you can't scale to more than 10,000 users, you got to work on, scalability and uptime. You know, if you have 90% uptime, that's not acceptable. You got to work on uptime. Mm-hmm. You got to, be conscientious of security and user privacy. Bugs, if the site is fast but people can't send an email, it doesn't matter that it's fast, so functionality is important. But once you get on top of those, security, availability, scalability, functionality, performance is the next thing to focus on.
But if I've got a blog, let's say that's not a company site, I can see getting a B or an A on a company site because that makes sense. But a blog or something, can I go and use some web accelerator? Maybe explain what those are. Maybe I'll use Google PageSpeed and I'll just run my blog through that. Or is that a solution to the average person's, the mid-sized business and smaller, or the average blogger and smaller's problem?
Yeah, I've got two things to say about that. One was, when Google first announced about a year and a half ago that we were going to take website latency or speed into consideration in page ranking, some of the complaints about that were that, this was going to favor the big companies. And I feel just the opposite. I feel like someone who, a mom and pop or someone who owns a blog is much more able to deploy changes more quickly and get their performance, up more easily. I bet you would share being two guys who come from big companies, how difficult it is to make fast progress inside a big company to production websites. That can be very time consuming with all the testing and push process that has to go on for that. So, that's one response to that is I think for smaller sites, it's actually easier to deploy those kind of performance optimization changes. But the other is, it's going through these accelerators, I think, is a great way to do that, especially if the website owner didn't build the website themselves, is not a programmer, or especially if they're using some CMS, again, like a blog platform, they can run it through one of these accelerator companies. And so, yeah, just to talk about that really quick, you know, when they first came out, they were, you know, like an Apache module or a network appliance that you could install between your users and your web server. Mm-hmm. But then about a year ago, we started seeing these cloud implementations come out. And so basically what you would do is you would change your DNS to point to one of these accelerator services. And then the accelerator service works as a reverse proxy, and they will proxy your website, and as it comes through, they will apply the fix-ups so that the user gets an optimized site. So in addition to having the content be optimized, most of these accelerators have a better geographic presence mm-hmm. than a smaller mom-and-pop or blogger would have. And so you'll get those benefits of like a CDN service of being having a better global presence.
And do those change? I mean, are those only for static sites? I mean, my blog has, like, for example, a lot of comments. I would be afraid if I put an intermediary between us that it would become less dynamic of a site.
No, if you look, the number of HTTP requests that people have to make to download your site, mm-hmm. Of those HTTP requests that are dynamic, it's probably like less than 10%, probably less than 2%. And so, you know, even though that dynamic request now has to take an extra hop to go through the proxy to your origin server and back through, mm-hmm. the acceleration you get by having the content accelerated and the rest of the HTTP requests accelerated is going to more than make up for it. And then if you look at these services, they all have the expected configuration options they can cache by the minute. Also, what they'll do automatically, most of them, at least all the ones I'm aware of, is they don't necessarily do the request to your origin server on demand. They're prefetching that in the background. Mm-hmm. So it's at fixed intervals, and a lot of them, you can configure this or they'll learn the behavior. They'll learn how often your website changes. And so they'll set, a ping rate every 5 seconds or every 45 seconds. They'll check the origin server and see if there were any updates. So it works pretty well.
That's pretty slick. And do you think that this is going to become a big thing? Will this always be kind of the niche?
I think it's going to become a big thing, but I think it's going to go beyond performance. I think, and in fact, there are some people like Cloudflare that are already doing this. If you think about it, there's a ton of these fix-ups that could be applied to a website. In addition to performance improvements, you could do things with SEO. You could do things for security. You could do things for internationalization. And so I think we're just at the beginning of this. And in fact, I think something that would be very exciting to start working on is I think we're going to need some specification for how these fix-up modules can interact with each other. Because what we're eventually going to get to is these fix-ups are going to be commodities. Mm-hmm. I want the YSLO set of fix-ups. No, I want the PageSpeed set of fix-ups. No, I want the StrangeLoop set of fix-ups. And I want the SEO fix-ups from this party or this party. And so you're going to have these, I think these, reverse proxy cloud services are a great way to do that, especially for, you're never going to have an Amazon run through one of these reverse proxy third-party services. But for, mid-tier to smaller website owners, that would make a lot of sense. And I think we're going to see this where it's going to become a column A, column B thing. I can pick the fix-ups and optimizations that I want from this reverse proxy service and the reverse proxy services that provide the most powerful and widest variety of fix-ups to apply are going to be the winners.
Sounds like it's going to get a lot
easier, but at the same time, it seems like it's going to be a lot more complex. I mean, this is definitely one more thing people need to be thinking about if they're not already. It seems like an obvious thing to think about performance, but it kind of seems like people are just throwing websites up there and not even giving a thought, are they?
Yeah. I guess.
The big sites do, but it just seems to me like the average, like your local dentist's office, he doesn't think about things like that, and he shouldn't. He should just push the make it faster button.
Yeah, yeah. I hate to say it, but I agree with you.
that's always a good place to end the podcast.
Is, you know, my site's hosted on DreamHost, and, mm-hmm. and if you go to DreamHost now to host your site, there's actually a checkbox you can check that says apply the page speed fix ups. So
nice.
How many people check that box? Probably, you know, a vast minority. Mm-hmm. But after that's been out for a year or two and it doesn't cause any of those websites to break, maybe instead of opting in, you have to opt out. And so the dentist who spins up a website off of DreamHost will get those fix-ups automatically without even asking for it.
There you go.
And so, you know, I think we're still in the early stages of this, but certainly the tools and techniques are going to harden and get better as time goes by.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Steve, for chatting with me today.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I was honored when I got your ping to be on Hansel Minutes. I've been checking some of the past podcasts, and they've all been really interesting, and it was a pleasure to be invited on and have this conversation with you, Scott. I hope we can do it again soon.
You're too kind. All right, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.